Hello, and welcome to episode 73 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the show where a group of indie creators sit around in the dark talking to each other about comics, how they make comics, and maybe by the end, one of us will be left standing. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars, and this week I'm joined by writer, Down the Tubes contributor, and car park enthusiast, Tony Esmond.
Oh, I got the first billing today, but yeah. I know where that is.
And the Third Musketeer, and as you all know, is a comic artist, writer and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Hello.
And there's a real...
Back to the traditional hello.
Yeah.
Classic, Dan.
Last week completely threw me off. Yeah.
Shouldn't be on him.
I can't help myself. It's those rippling muscles. Now, we've done 70-plus shows. I can't believe that we've done.
Yeah, fuck.
And we've talked with some absolutely amazing comics people about their creations. I've been very lucky to talk to some of them.
Yep.
As you folks out there know, we also make comics ourselves. We dabble in it a bit, don't we?
Try to.
We wouldn't say we necessarily know what we're talking about. But we make comics.
I'd say the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and from collaborating with other creators to sort of self-publishing work that's all our own, I think we're all doing our best to put out new comics for people to enjoy, much like most of you people listening do as well. But we haven't created this show to shamelessly pimp our comics that you should all buy immediately, without question.
It's a happy side effect.
Yeah, that's true. But there's one series that I've particularly wanted to discuss that's actually close to our hearts. It's a webcomic series that one of the rare ones I actually follow weekly. And I call that rare because usually when it comes to webcomics, I stock up for a few weeks or a month, which I think is quite... A lot of people out there do the same, don't they? Don't you think, Dan?
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah. That particular webcomic that I'm talking about is Vanguard by Dan Butcher. Hey, should I put like a cheer? Yes, that is you, Dan. Like, well done.
Yeah.
It's going to be like This Is Your Life.
Yeah.
Remember that guy that you owed £500 to back in 1986? Yeah. Well, we've got him here. Now,
remember that ex-girlfriend?
Yeah, voiceover.
Yes. So, Vanguard's an amazing book.
Thank you.
That's all right. I've got to be nice to you, haven't I? Creator with us every week... myself and Tony felt it was long overdue to have a little spotlight on the series.
Yeah,
I know, for instance, a lot of people that have listened to the show may have been introduced to the strip because of this show and probably want to know more about it. So we basically told Dan, you're not getting out of this. For this particular episode, we're going to fire loads of questions at you and see how you react.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's prepared, he's limbered, he's done his stretches and his lunges, haven't you, Dan?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Mentally, at least.
Yeah. So today is the spotlight on Vanguard. Now, I know certainly a lot of folks who read the series want to know more about it, but for those uninitiated or who haven't read it yet, shame on you, tell us a little bit more about what Vanguard is actually about, Dan.
This is a pretty hard one, actually. I'm not too great at the elevator pitch. But it's kind of it's a British superhero comic that's set sort of slightly in the future, a sort of dystopian Britain in a dystopian world. And the first half covers how kind of we're going to have to go completely spoilers this episode. So
quite a lot of different things have happened.
Because it does change, doesn't it? It to me, we'll talk about this in a bit. There is a big change in it, isn't there? Almost.
Yeah, there's a big change. Yeah. Essentially, like, the first arc, the first 9 issues, tells how, like, the world kind of falls into ruin and the bad guys win. And then in 10, it picks up from, like, a legacy hero. One of the daughter of one of the lead characters sort of comes into the frame and she sort of starts driving the story forwards.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's kind of got lots of elements of, like, media satire, which... I kind of picked up from stuff like The Day Today and Brass Eye and RoboCop, stuff like that. I absolutely think those kind of the little spots on the TV are fantastic.
Very sort of dark satire, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that Paul Verhoeven kind of stuff really always kind of chimed to me. And It's weird. It's like that Starship Troopers. I didn't really think much of that when I first saw it, but
you're insane.
After rewatching it,
I loved that.
Yeah,
from the first.
I really missed it. It just went over my head, and then after watching it again a couple of years ago, I kind of got what it was getting at, and I could appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay.
So much to talk about with Vanguard, really. Now, you're totally okay with initial spoilers for the first arc, are you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you listen to this show,
we won't spoil too much. We really won't. We won't necessarily talk about it. Now, it's made a different sort of story arc currently. Was that always the plan when you started it? Because this has been going for quite a few years, hasn't it?
Well, the initial plan was to start where issue 10 has started.
Oh, really?
With kind of like with the daughter or the son of a superhero team that had kind of fallen, and he or she would kind of pick up the remnants and try and kind of sort out a mess that had been left before.
So I'm almost an investigation of the past as part of the storyline, or
kind of a legacy hero, like your father's a famous superhero or whatever, and you're trying to find out what befell him and his comrades and why they fell and what happened to the world to make it so bleak. But when the more I got into fleshing out what happened before, it came a story I wanted to tell. So essentially, from the moment I introduced the main team, their fates were kind of already sealed, and it was like a march towards most of them dying in the story.
But I love the way you did it, though, because with a lot of stories that would probably do that, they would get all that wrapped up by probably issue 4, or you know, in the first couple of issues, that would happen. But you took your time to actually develop characters and to build up this arc, didn't you? It's not like you just wanted to rush that backstory out. So
no.
when it was all kicking off, and oh my lordy lord, does it all kick off at the end of that arc? As I was told Dan before, that like he spent basically weeks just ripping my heart out and stamping on it, in the best kind of way, of course. But yeah. You took your time to do it. Was that because you were having so much fun with it? No,
there was kind of a point where the story had to get to, like, it was like these things have to happen before I get to this point.
Hmm.
And I worked out as I was going, like, it's going to take me up to about issue 8, 9, 10 to get it done. Issue 9 is 40 odd pages long, which obviously is a lot bigger than an average comic book. It's because I wanted, that's like, it had all that sequence had to be told at once. I couldn't split it in two. It's kind of like it's like the final act of a film, and I couldn't stop it and then start again in another one.
But in traditional comic sense, that's not unusual. I mean, if you look at like some of the Marvel books, they would get to a big storyline, wouldn't they? You know, I'm thinking like Alpha Flight and these sort of books. You know, they'd rattle along at a 24-page, 22-page where it was going to be, and then suddenly you'd have a 50-page story.
Yeah.
You know, and because the story mattered, you know, I think that does happen. You know, I like that happens, you know.
Yeah, because sometimes you want more bang for your buck when you're kind of, it's the big finale, so it should be longer.
And you got the whole thing about the, you know, the story takes control of you and you write it as it should be, you know.
It's
difficult to write to an act structure or a page count or a, you know, you got to let the story dictate its pace, haven't you, sometimes?
I think, yeah, like, as you know, like, you cut so much more out than goes in. And if it's not absolutely relevant, I've learned this more and more as going along with the comic. I mean, I made some fumbles in the earlier issues and sometimes over-explained stuff, and readers have said you didn't really need to do that, and it's kind of...
Yeah.
It's hard because you never know what your readers are kind of taking away from it, especially when you're kind of starting out and you're not too kind of sure about it. I kind of wasn't giving my readers enough credit for what they were taking on, and there was things that I over-explained that I didn't need to. But that's the kind of lesson learned. And
the pacing is an interesting for yours. I find your pacing really interesting. I mean, there was a page recently which was it was almost just an overhead view. You know, there was a sort of, it was just a layout almost that, you know, if I was, you know, 25, 30 years ago, if someone said to me, you get to read the X-Men, but you get to read a page at a time, it would have driven me fucking nuts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the way you pace it as well is you've almost got a three-act structure on a page sometimes, haven't you?
Yeah. You know? That's, essentially kind of how I work. Every page is kind of got to work as a cliffhanger to the next one.
Mm.
So yeah. When you're writing a page, it's like there's got to be the point at the end. And you're like, oh my God, where does this go?
Yeah.
So there's a couple where it's kind of like just mid-conversation. And you think, right, I've got to end this with someone making a kind of a startling exclamation or asking a question or something. So like you want to get to the next one.
That's part of the tricky art of web comics, though, isn't it? A lot of people don't necessarily take into account sometimes. You know, especially for a sequential story that you know you're doing in these issues.
Mm.
Once you finish that page, you've got to be hankering for the next one, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of went to an average comic and kind of took the page out and put it in isolation, it might not work as well because when you're working for the webcomic, you've got to kind of every page is its own entity and it's got to kind of live or breathe on its own.
In a way, to me, it's more akin to a newspaper strip than it is to a comic page.
Okay,
yeah,
does that make sense?
I can understand that. Yeah,
yeah. The beats in I wrote in sort of newspaper strip, web strip thing. So it's 3 panels, 4 panels, and it, you know, you've got to have each beat. You know, you get into a certain rhythm, which your pages do as well. You know.
Mm. I mean, because like if you come across like a lot of webcomics, you come across them and you might be mid-story thing. And I feel like if you're not immediately kind of sucked into that page and it's almost kind of indecipherable, I don't think you're doing the job right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think one of the things that I like about Vanguard as well, that you've had those moments where you, especially with some of these like fights, there's a lot of action in Vanguard. For action fans, they get their money's worth, even though they're not paying for it because it's free. But there are those moments where I think like a story beat of action is going to happen, and then when it gets to the next sort of week and I open it up and something awesome's happened, but something completely different than I thought was going to happen. You know, I can honestly say that I can't guess what's going to happen in Vanguard from week to week.
It's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, you can't telegraph it. You can't, like, a lot of stories you can think, right, I know what's happening with that person. Oh, I know what's going to happen with this character. Maybe it's because of what you did in those first 9 issues, which therefore adds to that sense of uncertainty, like, you know, because I do spend weeks thinking, is this character going to be around until the end of this issue?
Yeah.
There is that, you know, that's a brilliant sense of uncertainty. I mean, only you know how permanent these characters are, but I'm fully expecting people to just drop off.
Die. Their front. But that's kind of like Game of Thrones and stuff. That's a good thing in the fact that one's wearing plot armor.
Yeah,
exactly. That's, I mean, I always think of your writing akin to maybe a Kirkman or a Miller or a Garth Ennis, where you just brutally do stuff for the story rather than, you know, a story where we know Spider-Man's going to live at the end of each issue. You know, it's going to be just this sort of continuing ongoing, you know. And like, it's a Game of Thrones, another, is just a perfect example.
Mm.
You know, the part of the plot beats is someone fucking dying.
Yeah.
You know, regularly, you know.
I mean, for me, it's the story. Everything must serve the story. Characters serve the story to push it along. And if you've got one character who's kind of placid, the other one's got to be kind of colour volatile so they kind of bounce off each other and push the narrative forward. And if a character's going to die, got to die to push that forward, that's going to happen.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now,
okay.
Speaking of the
story, it's a bit like your real life, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. Much.
If someone's got
to die, get to that train.
Yeah, they're going to die. Someone's going to die. now, what led to the creation of Vanguard back in the day? Obviously, you had this story, and we've learned now that it was always going to be what it is now, and then you've ended up doing almost a prequel. You've written a prequel. But what was the first spark of inspiration of like, this is the story I want to do? You know, what led up to that?
Honestly, I worked on a couple of webcomics with different writers and kind of tried to get my head around not only the kind of getting back into comics again, because I took a long layoff from, I went to like uni and studied basically design and graphics and illustration. Yeah. And I started pursuing that a long time, and then basically just didn't do comics for a couple of years and then came back into it and wanted to kind of find my feet again. So I did projects with others, acting as the artist, and then learning how to do webcomics basically. And then after I've been on a few projects, I thought, I've got my head around this. I think I can give it a crack. And I think I had like a couple of old character designs, and I just started forming the story around that. And I mean, a lot of the, without giving too much of it away, the the second arc that we're kind of going through now is kind of inspired a little bit by like Robin Hood tales and sort of old English
folklore.
As the second arc kind of rolls around, you're going to have a lot more kind of the rural versus the kind of the city and it moving in that direction. It's always about kind of the haves versus the have-nots.
Yeah, you don't see that much. Well, certainly in not necessarily in superhero fiction that I've read. You don't get, especially like in rural sort of landscapes and stuff. Normally superheroes are confined to cities and, you know, those sort of big arenas, aren't they?
Well, kind of, I did the article a couple of weeks, months ago, even about the what I don't want to see in superhero comics. And one of the things, I don't want to tell anyone not to do a story, but I don't really want to see another... Oh, I don't want to do another teenage superhero living in New York.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems like it's done to death. I'm not knocking anyone who wants to do it or is working on one of those stories, but it just feels like I don't know how much play you can get out of that anymore, and there's such a variety of stories you could tell.
Yeah, I want to see superheroes in London, like we used to see all the time.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, definitely.
So when it came to writing, did you write Vanguard from the... I know you've worked with writers actually on it, haven't you? But were you writing it yourself at the very beginning?
I think I started working with a chap named Gary Cohen.
Yeah.
And I did 1 to 5 on my own. And then after that, I started basically sending him the scripts so he could kind of tell me what was working, what doesn't. And... up till 10, me and him were virtually doing like about 50-50 each, but then Gary's had to step away to do other things, so it's kind of come back on me. But I have sent it to a few people who work as editors and sort of asked them for feedback, and it's good when you send it to someone who hasn't read it before, like the comic entirely.
Yeah.
And it comes back to you and they were asked questions. It's good in the fact that they're getting an outside eye and they've got no prior knowledge, so they can ask questions that maybe... you might have overlooked.
Yeah, there'll be those things that you haven't sort of noticed that are glaring to other people.
Well, so, like you, my guys, if you're so close up to the coal face when you're writing, sometimes you kind of...
Oh, God, you can't see wood for the trees. Yeah.
You're so intimate with what you're writing, sometimes you might lose telling them something about that's crucial. And But because you've lived with it for years and years and years, this aspect of the story, you just neglect to tell it.
I mean, do you find, because you're the writer-artist, do you find that you need to write it down? Because it's not going to live in your head completely, is it? And, you know, do you have to be specific around scripting and story-beating it?
A lot of the time, it's like, right, I've got, this is where this issue's, I've got a point where I'm travelling towards, that's going to be the end of this arc. I don't know if there's going to be another one after that. But,
all right.
Breaking down in steps, right? I need to get these characters need to meet up. They need to get here, and then like so I can say, right, that's going to be this issue, and then I kind of blow that up, write down all the key points, and then that break that into pages. And
yeah,
so that's kind of how it works. Do you write the script for an entire issue once you plot it out, and then work on the artwork each week, or are
pretty
you
much?
So you do have the whole thing sort of written out?
I mean, I've gone from having it all written out. Absolutely every single little facet of it, and then done it where it's kind of loose scripting. And to be honest, when you're doing the page and it's like the deadline's rolling up, I've got to get this posted, and you haven't worked on the script as much as you should have, sometimes I feel like the dialogue's been a bit weak, and I've gone in afterwards and like rejigged it. But I prefer now to have it all done and dusted, so because you think, oh, I've got ages to work on that, and then before you know it, a couple of months have slid by and that section you haven't written properly, like you've got to start working on it and put yourself under more pressure.
Yeah. What made you want to do it as a webcomic then?
I guess because it's pretty, I say it's non-committal. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, it's up there. You've done the work, you've got the comic, it's online, anyone can view it. If you're doing it on a free site, which initially it started on, there's no outlay, there's no risk or anything. Do you know what I mean?
It's kind of,
if people want to read it, they read it. If not, it's no... There's no loss to me.
Yeah.
So it was hosted on like just a free... What sort of site was it hosted on?
It started on Drunk Duck. I think it was still up there because the site is just an absolute mess and they've lost all the passwords and I can't be bothered to I can't be bothered to get my password back and take it down, but it's only up to about issue 5 on there.
Right.
And then I jumped onto my own site.
What was that like? Actually sort of like setting up your own site. And was that easy, or was that something you had done before?
No, I'd never done that before. I'd kind of just done a shit ton of research on it and asked around people in the know, like the webcomic community, and then they gave me some pointers, and then I just kind of went for it, and I've been kind of learning bits and bobs as I go, but I'm far from being an expert on kind of the HTML, CSS. I just kind
using already set up style.
Yeah, it's like a program,
WordPress or something, or
exactly. Yeah, it's WordPress, and there's a thing called Comic Easel, which essentially does 95% of the work for me.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that CSS thing seemed like far too much hard work, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But essentially, you're just kind of like moving blocks around on the page. It's not really that difficult. You've got to do a little bit of coding and get... I've had help from people who know what they're doing to try and point me in the right direction. I'm trying to work out something now which is a bit beyond my means of having like a landing page. And if you haven't read it before, you can click a button and go back to the first issue.
Right.
Or if you're already up to date, you press the other one and you go to the latest page.
Yeah,
I'm still working out how to do that.
Yeah, that's a huge thing for webcomics for me. I mean, yours and I think maybe one or two others are the only ones I ever really look at. And the frustrating bit with a webcomic is, where did I get to? Do I click backwards and forwards on it? You know, because I tend to use my phone to read webcomics most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and you're sort of waiting for, you know, the page to load. Oh, no, I haven't read that one. Oh, I'll go to the previous one. It's almost like you're spoiling it, aren't you, by going back to the pages sometimes.
I tell you what, there's one site called Comic Rocket.
Right.
Go on that and bookmark your favourites.
Oh, okay.
And basically, it will back catalogue, like, say five pages have been uploaded since you last read it. You'd go on to Comic Rocket and they'd say, right, you left off here, and there's another five
That's
pages
a great
you
idea.
To read.
Yeah. Like a bookmark for
exactly.
Yeah, I get you.
So ideal.
Yeah, I've done the same today with a couple. We're obviously going to be talking a bit more about webcomics later. I did the same with that, and I've gone backwards through them till I've found the one that I've read. You know.
Yeah. You so like you say, you turn to the most recent page and think, "Fuck, I've not read this," and you have to go back pages over stuff you haven't read.
Yeah.
Which it kind of kills it.
What drives you to sort of do this? Because you're very prolific, dude. You know, we talked about this before. And, I know you've got an audience now. Is it that drives you? Do you think without people reading it, you'd have stopped by now? Or would you just have kept going?
I'd have just kept going.
Yeah.
I love doing it. I love working and creating. I think I would do it. There's times like now when I'm between issues, I do other stuff for other people because I just like doing it so much.
You're in demand at the moment, aren't you, dude? So, which is what I was wondering. Because, I mean, I don't think it's any secret, but you're in demand and you're getting paying jobs now.
Yeah, I mean...
You still go back to it, you know?
Yeah, I've had to turn down... I feel like once I've started this story, I don't want to kind of say, all right, I've led you this far, now I'm done. And I'm not doing it anymore. And it feels like I'm stitching people up. You're kind of telling half the story and then running away and leaving people kind of out on a limb.
That's kind of web comics for you, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like with web comics, there'll be a certain point where they just jack it in or move on to better stuff.
There are a lot of web comics that just naturally slow down or stop, and then that's it, isn't it? Which can be frustrating if you're like you're a follower of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that. I did one, and we did a strip a day for a year, and that was our aim, you know. And at the conclusion of that, I thought, right, well, that's enough for me.
Yeah.
You know? And yet people are still saying, oh, when are you going to put those new ones up? And, you know, it's probably 50 or 60 that I've written that will never see the light of day, you know.
Yeah.
You're not tempted to go back to that?
Well, I'm not an artist, so I don't know. I kind of did it. A friend of mine came up and said, look, he just lost his job, and he wanted to do something with his day, and he said, if I drew a strip a day, would you write it? And I kind of thought, yeah, I'll do it for a year as an experiment. And we had an absolute blast doing it, and we got some really good feedback, and it got taken onto a couple of sort of webcomic sites, you know, did some interviews and stuff like that. But I just felt that I'd done it. It was a sort of Conan pastiche, basically.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I've done enough. I've sort of written as much as I can. A friend of mine wrote a story, and my son wrote a story, and I thought, well, that's enough. I want to move on to other things. I mean, he still does it occasionally, I think. You know, I check back in with it every so often, and he's still doing the odd thing.
Oh, nice. I think you sent us some of them, haven't you?
Mm. I sent you a couple of the more rude ones. Yeah.
But the thing is, quite a bit of time has passed since you did that story, isn't it, Tony? So I think creatively, your mind goes elsewhere, doesn't it? After a certain amount of time, you've got new stories that you want to focus on. It's just only natural.
It was a bit sort of brutally broad, I suppose. Mm. It's the way, you know. It was quite broad humour, and obviously I enjoy that, you know. But yeah, I'd reached the end of what I wanted to say.
But I think that's interesting, like, compared to what you're doing now. Obviously, we haven't really announced anything, but, you know, me and Dan have been privy to some of the stuff that you're writing at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit different, isn't it?
And, that's hugely exciting. I think
it's really going to be good.
Yeah, anyways, it's not about me, gentlemen. It's about Daniel Butcher. Yeah. So I was going to lead on from, you know, what drives you to how long is it going to run, mate? What's the plans? Do you think, you know, life goes on and stories continue. They don't necessarily have a beginning and an end, but how do you see it? I mean, do you want to say? Or
there's an end point that the kind of like a big climax that's kind of being worked towards.
Right.
That's a little bit way down the road, at least a good 10 issues. So I'm averaging about 2 a year. So it's going to take me about another 5 years to get there. But at that point, I'm not sure. I've no plans for the story after that point. So we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm a proud owner of the first print of the first trade.
Yeah.
There you go.
What about print issues? What's your thoughts on that?
Definitely go for the second one's pretty much ready to roll. I wanted to get like 5 per trade, and a lot of them, most issues go above 30.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you're getting a good old whack.
You properly get your money's worth with the first one.
Yeah.
Which had a successful launch at London Super Comic Con.
Sold out.
Really well, yeah. It's kind of all sold out. I'm looking to sort. I'm going to get the second one sorted out. I'm going to get reprinted the first and the second, and then hopefully be selling that again early next year. It's just getting the time to fucking do it.
Yeah. Were you surprised? Yeah, because you're also doing the current comic at the same time as trying to go back. I mean, how did you find looking at issue when you were putting that printed collection together? How did you feel about the first issues?
Well, I covered it in the foreword, as in this is work that I've done like 5 years ago. So it's not my best work. It was my best work at the time. But I'm not one of those revisionists that's going to go back and redraw stuff I've done. That's like done and dusted. You move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. And it still stands up, dude. It's still great stuff.
No, cheers.
You know? Yeah, yeah. I do think you've improved, but the early stuff is by far some of the best small press superhero stuff out there, definitely.
No, cheers.
Yeah.
I feel like kind of a lot of artists asked about kind of going back and redoing old stuff.
Don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
No.
No.
Because then you think, I could do issue 2 better, and then I could do 3 better, and then you're back round again. You think, well, actually, I've moved on since I've done 1. I could do. Where does it stop?
But to me, there's something in the creation relates to a certain point in your life, a certain point of and it's diluted a little bit sometimes by going back and constantly. So all these people who go back and constantly rewrite things.
I would agree. You're
diluting the energy at the time of you creating it was, you know?
Yeah. It's one not big fan of, like, when we keep on getting revisions of popular superhero myths. It's just, I don't want to see another origin story for this character.
The power of that original origin story or that event that's big in their life or something, you know? You know, I don't want to see Gwen Stacy killed again because at the time, it, you know, broke my heart, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah, exactly.
When you do it again, it doesn't have the same shock value. If anything, it detracts from it.
Yeah, it doesn't have the emotional impact at all, does it? You know, like every time, like the first time I saw Peter Parker bitten by a spider, or you know, you think, oh, you know. And then we see it fucking. How many times have we seen it now?
Yeah. So many.
Yeah. What have you learned by doing a superhero webcomic? You know, with their sort of audiences and stuff. You look at the vast amount of webcomics these days. And I wouldn't say superheroes are front and centre of the top or the main subject.
It's not the we can't call things politically correct, but it's not the sort of politically correct subject of the hour, is it? You know,
no,
superheroes.
Not.
They still sell, but, you know, people go, superheroes, you know. Yeah. But, you know, there's so many great examples of it out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of definitely the variety of webcomics and the kind of subjects and genres, it's vast now. And a lot of the audience, a lot of the creators coming through have not grown up on a diet of superhero comics maybe we did.
Yeah.
They've got a lot more kind of broad influences. I mean, maybe 5 years ago, there was a big like manga. Everyone was doing manga comics.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of it's moving on to something else.
You got to imagine, like, you know, 30-year-old people now, 25-year-old people, you know, have spent the last 10 years reading The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Mm. You know.
I tell you what, you see a lot of like stuff like Adventure Time, Steven Universe, that kind of wacky, offbeat kind of stuff taking precedence. It's great. I mean, it's kind of an ever-evolving, changing thing. Maybe kind of you can guess someone's age by the kind of superhero comic they're pumping out. To be fair, though, they're still they're still kind of a lot of people making superhero webcomics. I just don't think. I think there's a lot of people who think I don't want to sound like I'm bigging myself up and putting other people down, but they feel like, I'm going to do this and then just do what 100 other people have done before.
Mm. You got like, something like the Power Principle, for example. Mm. You know, these sort of guys, you know. I think, to me, I look at your... I think the first... I'd never met you and I read your strip and I thought, okay, I'm gonna guess the age of you as, you know, the peak period of reading was the Image Revolution and Marvel UK.
Yeah.
And that's reflected in your work, you know, in a good way.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
It did really shape me that time.
It's
heavily stamped on my work, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it definitely works that way. So, I mean, what if you... You get to do... Okay, so for some reason, the government bans it, Vanguard. they ban superhero
filth.
Comics.
Absolute filth.
Dirty boy. And they decide that Daniel Gunn's Butcher has to draw another genre. He has to draw... Like, you know, you get to draw another genre. You have to choose one, like romance or horror or, you know, autobiographical. Oh, fuck me, I'd love to see an autobiographical comic by you.
That'd be cool.
It'd be ultra violent.
Yeah. I was about to say super violent. Yeah.
Well,
what do you do?
One idea with, obviously it has to be post-apocalyptic.
So we're talking like, autobiographical,
like kind of the East Coast, West Coast America in like 1950s, and everyone kind of the East versus the West in kind of souped up road machines with guns and shit on them.
Oh, yeah.
So basically just battling it on the highways, like red versus blue.
That's deep written all over it, isn't it?
Yeah. That'd be great.
What we're like.
So real kind of high octane kind of.
Like proper greasers and stuff like that.
So there's no high tech shit going around on. It's all, I think that'd be pretty good.
I've just got sort of an idea of Dan Butcher does a romance comic, you know.
Yeah, a couple
meet in the park. You know, they're sort of coyly looking at each other. She's playing with her hair.
Yeah.
You know, they sit on a bench and his finger creeps over and touches her hand.
Yeah.
You know, and then she stabs him in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. Gets in her giant robot mech and just...
They cross eyes or lock eyes over the at the kebab shop counter after a heavy night drinking.
Oh, you beautiful bastard! You.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, the warmth of her Gatling gun attracted him to her.
Yeah, and it's called Strap On Blues.
Too much weird is that the action pages will get a lot more traffic.
Really,
the dialogue ones.
What would you say? You don't have to give us numbers, but what would you say? What have you found watching the traffic for the site is like?
Well, like when it's the action sequences, which essentially pay off, the site traffic jumps like at least a couple of hundred page views, maybe a bit more.
Oh, wow.
I average about 2,000 page views a day, which ain't too bad.
Bloody hell!
But, It can sometimes pop up a little bit more. Like when it got to the end of issue nine, which is essentially this, the whole issue's like payoff for the previous eight before it, the site traffic was really high because it was getting a lot of attention and people were liking it and checking back to read it. So, it's weird that.
How many people sort of comment like on the pages? You know, with that sort of traffic, does it convert into comments about people who are really invested into the story?
To be honest, I'm not great at answering comments because sometimes they'll be asking flat out spoilers.
Yeah.
And like asking who's this mysterious character, and it's like, well, I can't really tell you,
yeah,
because it's going to fucking spoil it. But
and to be honest, that's a stupid fucking question.
Yeah,
it is a bit stupid. I can't answer it. I mean, a lot of webcomics have a policy of they ask people not to talk about possible spoilers or what they think is coming up, because if you got someone who's kind of switched on and maybe knows like plot structure and narrative, they could say, well, this is probably going to happen or that's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
And essentially you might be spoiling it for other people who are not so enlightened.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can get like, I won't expect a page to have a lot of interaction. And I found one way of getting a lot more interaction on your pages, if your webcomics creators, ask questions in the text below the webcomic in the commentary.
See, this is one thing I notice you do, that some people will post up a page of their webcomic and that'll be it. Or they'll just sort of say, today, Stanley meets Jessica or something like that. Whereas when you post, you write a little bit, don't you? Each time. It's certainly more than I see a lot of webcomic creators writing. You've got like a blog post at the same time.
Yeah, I tried to kind of give a bit. Otherwise, it's just a faceless kind of, there's a page, and no interaction with the creator. I mean, the good thing is with webcomics is you can interact with the creator and talk to them as they go along when they're posting. Because there's times when, back in the day when you first start, you're just posting pages into the void because no one's interacting.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing people coming to the site and they're still not interacting, you're like, oh, what am I doing? Because there are obviously people are reading this, but...
Yeah. Do you find that you check the numbers, or have you got to the point now where you think, I don't care? I genuinely don't care if anyone reads this. It's not the reason I make it, you know?
Yeah,
I'm pretty much kind of... the only time I've kind of look at site traffic is like certain days when you post pages, just to see it spikes up and then drops down. But I'd like you say, I'd just carry on posting.
I basically banned my brain from looking at things. So I think when you've got a website, you can even look to see what parts of the world people are viewing from and stuff like that. I can't get, because you can't work it out, can you?
No.
You know, you can't work out, oh, why is this? And why are they looking at it? And why, you know.
We've had a similar thing with this show, you know, when it first started, we were sort of watching the stats. And then after a while, everything finds its natural rhythm. And you just you just roll with it, you know.
I mean, I've said it regularly to you guys. That's not why we do it, you know.
No.
It's not certainly not a primary reason why we would even do it. Think about doing it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not. I don't kind of. I've got that Google Analytics. I'm really struggling to think of the last time I looked at that. Because
you can even go to a town on that, can't you? I think it takes you. Sometimes you can go all the way down.
Really?
To someone's house.
Yeah.
And well, like, so you do get like most of the in Europe or. USA, but you do get the odd people kind of looking at it.
Yeah.
I know there's a chap from Russia, at least one or two that look.
Yeah, I'm always a bit suspicious when Russian people or Chinese people look at it. I suddenly think I'm being hacked.
You're not paranoid though, are you, Tony?
No, not at all. No, with my little foil helmet on here.
Oh, what an image. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I've wondered about this, and I see it on a lot of web comics as well, is you've got great and clear links on your website, but two of them, for instance, is one of them's follow on best web comics and vote on top web comics, and I see like a lot of strips have these, you know, vote on this site, you know, where it's like a collective of web comics. Does that help, and how do you find out and get involved with those sort of sites?
It's so on those sites, essentially, you just list your comic and you've got to put in like a few details, like description, a link to your site, and it would generate a code or a graphic you can insert onto your website and link it back to the top webcomics or best webcomics. And it will look at your site traffic, how many hits you get, and then place you accordingly. I think when top webcomics is based on votes. So we're kind of a webcomic user base, like, actively promotes their comic, and they're constantly, their users and readers are constantly voting on it.
Yeah.
It will go up the top webcomic chart, and the front page on top webcomics, it lists the top 100 webcomics by votes. So if your readers are voting and you get on that page, obviously you're getting a lot more eyes on your comic. because people will click the link.
But that's something you have to sort of constantly keep on top with, because
constantly.
Yeah.
You do stuff like voting rewards, so when someone votes on your comic,
yeah,
they get to see a JPEG that you've, or a something you've drawn or created.
Oh,
and
right.
To be fair, a lot of the ones that do really well is with kind of naughty material, like a character from the comic with their tits out, or something a bit risque, so people have got the incentive to, like, if you click this, click on this, and you get to see so and so's nuts. And you go, oh, yeah, I want some of that. So you click on it,
and that's what you've done with yours.
No, see, I kind of I do it for a bit, and then it's like, I'm not too fast. I can't.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people do the webcom, and it's like more than a full time job. It's it like is, you're on it all
is,
the time.
Yeah, it is a lot of work, and you know, as we always say, you've got a full time job. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's not like, you know, you can do webcomics 24 hours a day.
No, I mean, what other people, teams have, like, say you've got a writer and artist, instantly those duties are halved.
Yeah.
So the kind of marketing, you're doubling the amount, and
yeah,
so-and-so can look after that and I can look after this. But when it's kind of one-man band,
yeah,
not only are you doing all the fucking creating, you're also doing all the marketing as well, which is, it just takes time and effort. And
yeah. How do you find the marketing of Vanguard? Like, you know, shouting out to the masses. Is that something you enjoy?
No. I always feel like a massive fucking shill. Like,
yeah.
Like when you do the tweet, I don't mind doing like, here's a new page, because you don't keep on bleating on about it. When you just kind of send out a tweet into the void, say, I'll read my comic.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of it. It needs to be done. But
yeah. I feel like it is a necessary evil.
Yeah. You're in quicksand, because as soon as you stop, you're sinking and no one's paying attention to you.
Yeah.
So you got to keep kind of bleating on about it.
I know I've said before online, you know, I hate doing it, but, you know, here's a link to such and such. And you always get the response, you wait until you do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do get that, don't we?
Yeah. Because that...
Well, I like to think we help people with last week's Kickstarter suggestions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. We got some nice feedback from that.
Yeah.
Already. Yeah, we did, didn't we? Yeah.
What, you mean the Kickstarter we're going to do?
No, we don't. I'm not doing that wanking thing, I tell you now.
Look, you've already signed up.
Yeah.
That's one of our most popular pledges.
I think you should have done it for more than a fiver.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got 2,500 so far. Yeah. You going to be all right with that, Tony?
We're going to go gangbusters on the total. Myself,
so I've made £35 this week.
Oh, dear. Hopefully you folks listened to last week's episode.
All right, 95.
So, what about...
Well, 100 now.
It's live. You're watching it live, folks.
You're like, right, we get to see this on the bloody Skype video.
Don't wank live on this podcast. Oh. We can't possibly just sell ourselves any more than I just told everyone I was wanking. About being to sell.
People probably think you're doing it anyway.
Was this the episode we wanted Valiant to listen to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're wanking all the time on their podcast.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Our kind of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of people do think we're wankers, probably.
Yeah, let's do the spin-off, Ninja Jackoff.
Oh, look, we're not going to do puns on Valiant characters.
I can't do one on Bloodshot. That's too horrible.
Yeah, back to Vanguard, though.
Yeah, sorry.
Patreon. What... actually inspired you to start a Patreon for it?
I've got loads of material for the comic and stuff I sketch up and stuff that I do that just doesn't seem like it has a home on the main site. I kind of
diluted a bit, wouldn't it, by putting like loads of sketches up.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the kind of blog posts I have over there, kind of wanted to keep them quite relevant, and if I just fill it full of sketches and random doodles and stuff like that, I feel like I kind of kill it. And people who contribute to the Patreon, I've gone back and forth with it a couple of times. I used to do and like keep ahead on the updates and that people on the Patreon used to get like a week's worth of updates ahead, but I found it was negatively affecting the comic and the experience of it, because people who were a week or two ahead wouldn't be on the main site interacting. They would just be on Patreon.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'd rather everyone was there. But then I give, like, we do the Vanguard retweet rewards, that when you're a patron, every time I put up a new page twice a week, your name's automatically entered for that. And if your name's drawn out randomly, you get like a free sketch, or depending on your patron amount, you might get a full commission, which I've done two of. So,
okay.
Lucky cool. people. Yeah.
Now, I talked a bit to you about Patreon, and John and I down the tubes were talking about me doing an article on it, because it certainly spiked in popularity about a year ago, I'm going to say, Patreon.
Yeah.
And there's been, and I didn't do it, and the reason I didn't do it is there's, for every 5 horror stories around Patreon, you know, of people just not doing anything,
yeah.
or people, you know, sending out, you know, inspirational quotes, I think someone put up as one of those.
Yeah.
You know, there's somebody like yourself or Jenny Gilblad who treats it seriously, you know, and does a good job with it. And that's the reason I didn't write it, because I thought, I don't want to do down, you know, the percentage of people who do really well at it. And you're one of them, Dan. You know, you treat them seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to treat it with, you know, with the discipline to it, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I try to do it like daily, at least 5 days, 6 days a week, like putting an update on there. And it, for Vanguard readers as well, you might get little tidbits of this coming up in the story. You might see this coming up, or so it's a nice way as well. They're like, if you're reading the comic and you want to donate $1 a month, which is what, like 25p a week to read it.
Yeah,
I think that's fair enough. I don't ask for anyone to give me money, but I'm happily, if you want to kind of donate it to it, because I use it every year to kind of pay for the site.
Oh, hosting. Okay, good idea.
Yeah.
So that kind of, I don't have to worry about that every January when it rolls around. I know that's already taken in hand with the patrons sorting that out. So that's pretty handy. Yeah. But yeah, you could try and give something. If people are willing to kind of give up their money, I want to give them something for...
And it's like a sort of, it's like a fan club almost, isn't it?
Essentially, that's the way I treat it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're there, I presume you've got a real interest in the comic, so you're seeing stuff that other people don't.
Yeah.
I put up tons of stuff there. I've also done the issues in PDFs. I put up on there for readers. So I've just got to sort out 10 as a few amends to it, and that'll be going up there for readers.
The issues are also available on Comixology. There's loads of different ways to get Vanguard, isn't there?
Yeah, I try and get it. See, I'm not. It's a bit of a pain having to keep on clicking and going through the bloody website to read all the pages.
Yeah.
So if you've got it somewhere like Comixology and it's on there for like a nominal little fee, download it and read it that way through the guided view, and it's a lot easier, I think.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And it also pays, so.
Yeah.
But I did kind of, I've kept the first so many issues on Vanguard, like pretty much the minimum money on Comixology, and then started hooking it up a bit, because I feel like if you're kind of this far into it, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
I mean, first taste is for free and all that. it's all free on the site, so I'm just talking about my ass there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not everyone's going to know about the site, so you've got to try and just spread your wings and get it out to as many people as possible, haven't you, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just getting eyeballs on it, isn't it? Yeah. Trying to get it out as many people as possible.
Yeah. So we've got some listener questions. We gave a shout-out.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
Shall we start, Dan?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, go for it.
This one from Matt Strott at Messy Comics. He says, how do you have a family, a job, a horrible commute, and still crank out quality comics? Is it a pact with Satan?
You wouldn't agree to the terms.
A lot of people wonder this, because, like, you know, I mean, we always joke, you know, Dan Butcher, busiest man in comics. But you have a full-time job, you know.
I do,
you have a family. You know, it's not
you do, like, a shitty podcast once a week.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is. I kind of treat the whole thing as a workflow, and I might be working on a page this, like, 2 weeks down the line or a month ahead, or because I do my work differently to others, where a page is a whole piece of paper, whereas I break mine up into panels. to make it easy for myself, so I remember
when we were London for LSEC, I saw some of your stuff in the sketchbook and some of your work that you're working on, and it really intrigued me, because obviously I work on 11x17, the whole page is there, whereas you're working like, it's almost not like a scrapbook, but you're working on small panels, getting that right, and then you put it all together like a jigsaw afterwards, don't you?
In Photoshop, I literally put it all together.
Is that the way you've always done it, or was that just a working that you discovered?
Pretty much, the easiest way of doing it, rather than doing it on one sheet of paper. I'm pretty adept at Photoshop. So I can alter things when I'm in there. If I don't like a page layout, I can quickly change it around. And sometimes when you get all the elements on the page, it's quicker to manipulate it in Photoshop rather than if it's on the one piece of paper, that's what you're working with. And there's benefits and drawbacks for both. But just for ease of use, I do it on smaller pieces and then put it together in Photoshop.
Yeah. So when it comes to working, do you set aside time in like the evening or the week, if you can, to work on the comic?
Well, like I draw on the commute, drawing in the morning, a lot of evenings I do it, be odd couple of hours at the weekend, but I try and spend more of that with my family. I just try and sort of snatch time when I get it.
Yeah.
Like at times, sometimes at work, if it's quiet, I can have a small screen up and I'll do the lettering or something.
Yeah.
So we're obviously not working on a comic there. It's just text on the screen. I can letter 5 pages.
Yeah.
Or even put the graphics down and then go in and put the graphics and then move the text boxes around as needed. So it's just kind of trying to use the time as wisely as you can when you've got it.
Yeah, especially with lettering, sometimes when you've got lots of dialogue and you just need to put those speech bubbles in. Do you know what I mean? That's a time sucker, isn't it, really, that people don't necessarily think about. But it is one of the more laborious parts of the job. But then eventually it all sort of clicks together, doesn't it, as the page comes together.
Indeed. I mean, I'm quite fortunate in the fact that my job allows me to kind of do that. And I work on design programs all day. Whereas obviously if you were a cab driver or something, I guess you could try and draw while you're driving around London, but
we don't advise it.
Yeah, there's not many jobs you can draw while you're working, is there? I suppose security guard or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
peep show operator.
Yeah,
maybe, but that role won't be available until you quit, Tony. So
I'm busy working as a cam girl at the moment. So
wonderful.
Bad.
Oh, yeah. That's money you won't get back, people.
A couple of things I sacrificed is video games. I've virtually stopped playing them.
Yeah. Video games are rubbish. I say this because I've never actually played one, and I don't really care to.
I just can't. I can't do it now. If I'm playing a video game more than a half hour or so, I feel absolute guilt of this. Like I shouldn't. This is a waste of my time.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be doing it. So
you're not playing the right games, Dan.
Yeah, I enjoy the games. It's like,
No, I mean those sort of things. I mean, whether it's video games or movies or the internet, there's so many distractions, aren't there? I've been distracted too many times from some of the work that I've had to do.
I go into work an hour early, and then I go into work an hour early, and I discover there's work I can be doing, and then it just seems to accelerate. So I seem to be going into work for like 5:30, just so I can get half an hour of writing done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of madness, really.
Then you start cracking on with the work and you're doing more and more work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets to sort of 6 or 7 o'clock at night and you're shattered. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Look after your health.
We always have time. There's always, everyone goes, I haven't got time to do that. There's always time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always time.
Yeah.
You got to kind of manage it effectively.
Yeah. It's time management, isn't it? That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be writing when you're sitting on the loo, can't you? If you're thinking about writing when you're sitting on the loo, write. Everyone's got a phone in their pocket with a note section on it or a bit of paper or something. There's always time, isn't there?
I use my time on the commute of like, even if I couldn't, I could have a notepad out and be writing stuff for the ideas a lot of people see them turn around and they're just on their phone looking at shit for
playing a 45-minute journey. Fruit that drops down.
Crush, is it Candy Crush?
Candy Crush, yeah. I tell you what, I'm I do miss. I used to commute on the train, and you know it was like an hour's journey, and I do miss kind of having that sketchbook or you know notepad just to write down loads of ideas because I walk to work now. So, you know,
okay.
I can't really do that. Whereas I used to, as soon as I sat down on the train, out came the notebook, you know, headphones are in and I'm just scribbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about...
It's also a great time to read as well, you know.
Yeah.
You know, read pile, you know. Yeah.
Right, second question. Sam Reed at Bronze T-Rex. Cool. He said, does how often you post updates make a difference on the number of views?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
There were like, the more you post with webcomics, the more you post, and it sounds obvious, but the more you post, the more traffic you'll get, like the higher amount of traffic. I found if you're doing one update a week, the traffic you're getting is kind of very small, whereas the two is more than the combination of just posting one.
Yeah,
more than double one, because okay. people check back. So I've been trying to do, it's been kind of dropped off over October and November, I've been so busy, but like have an update on a Wednesday and a Friday, and then like on a Monday or Tuesday, I have a blog post or I've put something up there that's going on.
Yeah.
So like there's something coming up most days of the week trying to get people to come back. I think what I do get some traffic on Saturday, and that's where the time zone of people in America reading the comic late in the afternoon, evening, but it equates to site hits for me in the UK on Saturdays. Yeah. So, yeah.
So do you time... When you post it, is there a logical reason that the time you stick it up is a good time for America or a good time for England? Or
exactly, yeah. There's like you get a different time periods. I've looked into this, and a lot of people kind of go for trying to hit when people are getting up. Like say in America, like the mid morning, they've got into office, they've cleared their initial shit for the day, and then they go and kill a bit of time on the net, and that's when you want to kind of hit that period. And
yeah. It's like the notifications you get on your phone from Twitter and Facebook and stuff.
Exactly.
When people look at them when they're, like, for example, you know, doing their morning business or, you know, it's that sort of thing, isn't there?
You're trying to hit people. It's become such a refined art now that they're looking to hit these emails coming to your inbox at certain times of the day when they know you might be to the point where you're going to click on that link or look at it or interact with it.
Yeah, but if when it reaches 4 o'clock in the day, you ain't got the time to be doing stuff.
No.
If you know, the day's sort of overtaking you, isn't it? You know?
Exactly. So I've done stuff in the UK trying to, if I've updated it early in the morning, I'll try and get it when people are commuting into work. So like, oh, I'm on the train journey or I'm doing this, I can quickly check out the comic.
Yeah.
And then maybe again in the mid-morning and then maybe again in the evening at around the same time of a kind of commute time. You might be sitting around waiting for something and you check it out when you see the link on Twitter or something.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Ah. Alfie Gallagher, at Alfie Gallagher, he says, Dan Butcher, man or machine?
Good old Alfie.
What do you think, Tony?
I think he's a machine.
We're very suspicious of machines on this show, aren't we?
We are. We don't death machines, nah. Aren't they? Yeah, let's get away with them. I don't even like computers.
Are you trying to throw the scent off us, Dan?
A machine would say that.
Yeah, a machine would say that.
I tell you what, I kind of, not to sound too gushing, I've learned a lot off of Mark Lamin and the way he approaches stuff. We've only had his show a couple of times, I've only met him a couple of times, but the way he goes about stuff on Twitter and the way he talks... being very kind of structured and disciplined and getting on with it and not getting sucked up in all the bullshit. It's really kind of, I've taken lessons from that.
I think for a longevity in comics, you need to stay away from all that shit. All these people who get themselves fucking involved in bullshit online, especially, you know, you think, you're just going to upset too many people. Just stay away from it, you know.
Yeah.
You're definitely upsetting someone. You're always upsetting someone in that crowd.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, and if comics is your business, you've got to be careful. I don't give two flying fucks because comics ain't my business, so I can say what I like. But these people are, you know, got to be careful, haven't you? Yeah.
Honestly, if I was in doing comics professionally, I would treat social media with absolute kid gloves.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I'd literally be posting up work and not making any professional or political or personal statement on there.
And also, I just think life's too fucking short. I'd rather just talk about positive things. You know, the reason that I'm on these social media sites is to look at artwork and to,
to
just have a good time looking at comics, you know, talking about comics and stuff. You know, I'm done, you know.
We've all talked about this. We've all had our little breaks recently, haven't we, you know?
Yeah.
I've reassessed the way I'm dealing with social media after last week and the elections. I'm not going to get involved in debating and talking about that stuff anymore, because it just seems pointless.
I think I said something tiresome. Like, I think I haven't said much about it, and I don't intend to, but I said something about, look, apparently we all need to have exactly the same opinion. But we don't, do we? The shame of the internet is such a wonderful place for finding out so many different things and meeting so many different people, but it seems to be sort of dragging us down one track of like all insisting that we think the same thing. It's a shame.
And like most of the time, it'll just annoy me, and I'd rather be thinking about happiness and just good times
watching pornography
with good times with my bros, Dan and Tony.
Watching
porn. That's just day
to
day.
Stepbrothers, bros and hoes,
bros, bros, hoes and blows. Anyway, next question. SJ Webster at SJ Webster Art. He says, your Twitter handle is your comics name. What happens when Vanguard ends and you start a new project?
Well, you can change the Twitter handle relatively easy, I think.
See how he just dismissed it. Well, you can just change it.
But I don't know. I kind of I hadn't considered that, to be honest.
Yeah. You'll always be Vanguard in our eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Muck Vanguard. Maybe this,
yeah. That's what you'll change it to Dangard.
You totally should have done that to begin with.
I'm going to change mine to Jester Diablo.
I tell you what, it's the sexiest name on the internet.
I'm not giving you shit for that. For about a year, I was thinking the other
day.
Yeah, and I just think it's funny considering the nonsense that your fucking Twitter name is.
Vince has weathered the storm, hasn't he? He hasn't changed it.
He's just made that sort of eye roll every time he mentioned it and tried to bore me out of it, but I'm not. I'm coming back for more.
Oh,
Tony's sensing weakness.
Yes. Simon Russell at Simon at Boeing. He said,
Simon's clearly a follower of your strip. This question,
really,
and he's a good egg, actually. Really good guy.
That's a really interesting question.
Can we ask the philosophy behind breaking panel borders? It's grown over time and happens on 90% of pages in issue 12.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I posted up a kind of workflow of like all the pages laid out side by side earlier in the week, and it's really evident from that. And I think it's that thing of each page is its own entity. So trying to have like a bit of kind of stuff coming out of you, or a kind of highlight on that page of one something breaking the border or the panel.
Obviously, do you think it's a stylistic choice that you've kind of got a little bit stuck in now, or are you pleased with the way it's turned out? Or
I don't know. To be honest, with the comic, there's so little time for stepping back and looking at what you've done. Kind of like when we were on the show. Mm. You're so busy making the thing that rarely do we get a chance to step back and look over what you're doing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to step back and look at what I'm doing.
Well, also, I think it really works. I'd say, you know, I really do.
And I think if it does or not, to be honest.
I think it gives it a real energy. Yeah. You know,
and I think because the pages, certainly more recently, are more action orientated at the moment. Mm. You're not doing this for dialogue. You know, it's not going to sort of enhance a dialogue scene, is it? To have someone walk out of a panel, whereas if you get someone being smashed in the face and it's breaking a panel board, I think there are limits to it.
Yeah,
And it's finding when it's best to do it, and when
it's like the exclamation mark. Yeah. Like, if you overuse it, you totally fucking kill it.
Yeah,
I like to play about with structure. I was funny mentioning Lamming. I was talking to him about this the other day, and we were talking about the spirit. Mm. And I was saying I love the fact that he played with panel borders and to even title sequences and you know, the size of panels and stuff. And I think that, you know, experimentation like that gives it real life.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, after How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. The first, the second book I got was the Comics and Sequential Art by Will Eisner.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, the framing and what he does was just absolutely mind-blowing. I just couldn't believe that someone was doing that.
Doing that back then as well. You know, we kind of almost take it for granted now, but when you think, you know, that's what, 50, 60 years ago, you know, incredible.
There's one with
stuff.
A spirit and he's inside a cave and basically the panel border is the darkened edges of the cave and he's kind of like off center, illuminating it with a torch.
Yeah.
It's just so well done using the kind of confines of the page to build it. It was amazing.
Yeah, we've got to experiment with where the eye is drawn on the panel, I think. You know, yeah. I think the more... I was watching, slightly off subject, I was watching Stardust Memories the other day, which is a Woody Allen movie, which is quite famous for... Basically, he just said, oh, fuck it, and just did this really... You know, so people were talking from off-panel, you know, and the eye's drawn to a picture on the wall rather than the action of the characters and stuff like that. And I think, in a way, Eisner and a lot of the greater experimental comic people do that. They play with your conception of what is in the panel until you concentrate more on it and you realise you have to almost pull out a bit sometimes from a panel to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that people try that, you know.
Mm. Yeah. There's a panel in a recent page where there's three characters walking through the wilderness and I wanted to kind of, on that I pulled it right out where they're quite small. So kind of like frame them again in this kind of larger world.
Yeah, I like that one. I really did like that one. Yeah.
Trying to do it when the wilderness, when they're kind of in open shots, it's quite big panels and they're quite small. But when they're kind of in foliage, it's a lot more kind of close in and you see the branches and stuff quite in close to kind of get them.
And sometimes your dialogue, and I mean this in the best way because I'm a big fan of his dialogue, I get, especially in scenes like that, I get the sort of snappy, interacting dialogue, which... You have a conversation in a panel sometimes with your dialogue, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, it's a backwards and forth rather than something said in one panel, move on to the next one. You get a back and forth in the same way that Bendis does in, say, Powers or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you kind of, with my role in dialogue, is absolutely just cutting. People are lazy. You will use three words instead of saying five. You want to get, like, the quickest... say the most by saying as little as possible. Do you know what I mean? Like get your message over as quick as you can.
Yeah.
And if you can get that by, like say, saying three words over five, that's what a character will do.
Yeah.
So I always try and think of that when I'm writing dialogue
and also try not to overwrite it. You know, some people
exactly
get very heavy with, you know, I mean, certainly I have in the past, I've put too much in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then it's.
I've done it. Yeah.
As soon as you pare it back, it becomes sparkier. It has more of a life to it, and it bounces more. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Cheers. Yeah.
That's all right. Well, we like your strip, Dan. That's why we talk to you.
Oh, thank you.
Tom Curry at This Chucklehead said, "Do you have an ultimate end goal with Vanguard in terms of story, or is it evolving over time?" Now you've sort of briefly touched on this. But let's expand this. Sort of say you have said that you know what the end is, but depending on as you're working on it, have you found that the story does evolve and some things diverge and go in a different way?
Yeah, definitely. But in the set, kind of using a metaphor, if I was kind of going to a certain place in the country and you're driving there, you might take different roads to get to the same destination.
Yeah,
you're still aiming at the same point, but you might spin something off that's. Because obviously you don't work on a story for 4 years and then don't have your mind changed and new influences come in and a different way of thinking. So the point I'm working towards, without giving too much away, is kind of like an echo of what happens around issue 9, of sort of like history kind of repeating itself, but trying to be righted and done the right way of it being done. I don't want to give too much away, but it's not going to be... I don't know. It depends. That story is yet to be told, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
Okay. Cool. Now, we've got one more question here from...
I know which one this is.
Is this from my lovely wife?
Yes. Zoe Butcher, or is it Zoe?
Zoe.
Zoe Butcher, at The Zoverlord. She said, "Can someone please ask him about tiny head syndrome?"
this tiny head sitting there? I'm trying to work that out.
She thinks I draw my character's heads too small. I do that often. It's fine. I mean, it used to be Thunderfires, because back in the 90s, like being very heavily image inspired, all the characters with massive thighs. I managed to sort that out, but now obviously I'm suffering with tiny head syndrome. I think I must have read, but I read a comic that said, like, if you make your character's head a bit smaller, it makes them look chunkier and meatier. And
right.
I've subconsciously taken that on and never fucking stopped doing it.
Does she mention it, like, every when you do a page and you're like, oh, look at this? She goes, tiny head. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, one of the best things about it, she kind of does writing and stuff herself, and if I show her something, she will give me the brutal honesty of what works or doesn't.
Mainly I love the way you say that's one of the best things.
Yeah. Because, you know, like, sometimes you'd show a picture to someone, and, oh, yeah, that's nice, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And then if you showed someone, say, well, that character's head's too big or that doesn't look right, and you know you're getting honesty then.
Yeah,
not trying to sugarcoat it.
Do you go and have a sulk when that happens? Do you sort of go, well,
oh yeah,
I just, nothing, and then
I just
then...
walk down the road, starts fucking that fucking old dip, fucking. And then... kick something. No, no. Usually I just kind of like, oh, yeah, fair enough. Can't see anything wrong with that, and that's right or not, and then change it accordingly.
Go, tea, darling.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, that, yeah, it's fine. It's clearly not fine.
It's fine.
Does she listen to any of these shows?
No, no.
Oh.
I think we talked about this before. I don't think anyone I know. A typical life, a couple of people I work with have listened to one or two episodes.
Yeah, a person I work with today mentioned it out of the blue, and I went, oh, that's quite nice that you listened to that. Yeah.
I thought they worked with that me all fucking day, and then the last thing they do is listen to me.
They watch you at night as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're just like a bunch of weirdos, and one of them's just talking about wanking all the time.
By the way, but just for anyone who's keeping note, £105.
Oh, nice, nice. Perhaps we should have done it for children in need. Anyway.
I'd feel bad about that. I'd feel a bit dirty. Can we do it for another charity instead? What about the Dogs Trust?
Yeah. That's so much better.
What about Help the Aged? No.
Can you imagine the scene handed over like one of those giant-sized checks?
Yeah, here you go. Can you have the check? I think it's stuck to my hand.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I wouldn't shake that hand. Seriously.
Tony had a marathon wankathon in front of the studio audience.
In front of the studio.
Don't make eye contact with me. Look away.
Don't look at me.
The fucking audience. I got to look at you. Yeah. Tell him look away. He's looking at his phone anyway.
Haunting image.
There you go, folks. We give you entertainment, don't we? We give you something to think about for the rest of the week.
I tell you what, there was one extra question that Susie asked on Facebook about the colouring.
Oh, okay.
She said, Susie Gander.
Yes, I've got it here. Bear with me.
Ah, okay.
Susie Gander. Have I said that right?
That's right.
How do you
do... Is that a real name?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
How do you do your lighting and shading? I have always admired how you do it and such bold, bright colours. I'm scared to do it and can never get it right when trying other lighting sources.
Oh, just observation. That's the only thing I can say. Like, look at how films are lit. I'm on Pinterest and you can see examples. Just Google stuff. It's literally just you got to keep observing light sources. I mean, even look, I don't necessarily recommend looking at other comics and how they do their light sources, but it certainly can't hurt to look. But
because Vanguard does have quite bold, striking lighting and colours and stuff.
I've tried to push that more and more to make it more kind of like that. And
well, you've got like holographic sort of video screens and stuff, and you even think about the colour that is then projecting onto the people watching it.
Yeah.
There's actually a colour scheme, I won't spoil it too much, but there's actually a colour scheme that's been going since issue 10 that's relevant to the certain sides, the good side and the bad side, if you want to call it that.
Oh, I like that.
You can look through certain things, have certain colours.
Oh.
Try and have experiment with that.
Are you having fun doing that? Is that quite fun?
Yeah, because I had to go back recently and redo a page that I thought that shouldn't be that colour. That's not right. And tweaked it. It was blue. Now it's become orange. So
this is quite a labyrinthine plan, isn't it? Interesting. Yeah.
It's trying to stuff I've kind of set up that sometimes you forget I set it up when then it's the payoff for it. And it's, oh, fucking hell, yeah. That was a callback from that issue.
But the thing is, because you're playing the long game with this series, it seems like, whether you know it or not, you're creating ways to keep it interesting for yourself, so you're doing something different all the time and, you know, to liven up. Is it fair to say that that's actively something that you're doing?
Yeah, all the time, kind of trying to...
Yeah.
I always find it fun and interesting because just looking forward to kind of really reaction when you're building something up and then you get the payoff, I find that the most rewarding thing.
Awesome. So the latest issue of Vanguard has just finished with a cliffhanger.
Yep.
It's going to be back in the new year, in January?
Yeah, probably January. Yeah.
Are you all on board for that?
I've got some key points in the script, but it's far from being finished, but they'll get done over Christmas. Someone asked about how far I work ahead. When I start an issue, I can be about 4 pages ahead, and then halfway through an issue, I'm like 3 hours ahead.
Yeah, I think we got a question, didn't we, about how far you bulk up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
About it.
Right, okay.
That's why kind of the end of issue can kind of like some pages are slip a week because
you just get
out by shit and it's just, I can't. You can, one of the things that, like, I always feel like the Vanguard pages, the time I've put into them, I don't sometimes think they're never like the absolute best they can be. Some of them are, but a lot of them I just have to abandon because it's like, well, this is what I can do in the time.
All art you got to walk away from, you know.
But certainly feels like when you're doing the weekly and it's like, well, I've got 3-4 hours to do this page. It's not going to be the best, but you got to get as best as it can be.
Yeah. JP Jordan asked the question at JP Jordan. He said, what's your general buffer, if any?
Yeah.
What's your ideal buffer, actually? What would you like?
4. That's 2 weeks ahead.
Yeah. So you'd like to have
4. Well, I'd ideally like to have a whole issue ahead.
Yeah.
Realistically, 4 would be great.
Yeah.
Because that kind of, if you get any hiccups, to be fair, if something fucks up, I don't really have a lot of time to maneuver and bang. I can't, it's very hard to up. I'm working at full pelt to get 2 out a week. If I got 3, I don't think I could do it. So, there you go.
Well, there you go.
Man has limits.
You've got no limits. No retreat, no surrender, Dan. No retreat.
There's no limits.
Yeah. Just reach for the sky. No valley too deep and no mountain too high.
I'm impressed you knew the lyrics to that.
Techno, 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 techno. That's all I've got to say.
Speaks to us all.
I would have loved it if Tony said techno, techno 5 times.
I was going to say love is a battlefield, but I didn't say it in the end.
So where can people find Vanguard as it is to, you know?
You can read the webcomic at vanguard.com and I think we're up to issue 9 on Comixology. You can check it out there.
Awesome.
And I'll hopefully be getting reprints of book 1 and book 2 in 2017.
Nice.
So
I'll let you know when that's ready to go.
Tons more.
I'm looking forward to getting my second trade.
Yeah, Dan, you'll be fully aware of how Dan is a broken man trying to put all those books together.
we had a bit of a tense week or so, didn't we, before London this year?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to talk about what ones we're going to do next year.
Yeah.
It's all changed. The landscape changed.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll definitely do London again. I think that was
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Even if it's just so we all have a Chinese. We're eating it with spoons, Tony Esmond.
That's how I fucking eat it. That's me.
Fucking gangster.
Have we mentioned on the show your thing about having one day cons? I think
we did talk about this online, didn't we? And I just came to the sort of realisation that 2 day and 3 day cons are just fucking just groundhog day, aren't they?
Yeah, I just think it's the same traffic portioned out over 2 days.
And by the Sunday, it kind of dies off, doesn't it? Yeah,
big time.
I mean, I haven't done many like 2 days, but from what I've seen this year, the Sunday crowd is definitely getting quieter on Sunday.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
Sunday at London was very quiet, wasn't it?
Yeah, big time. I think it'd be like con opens at 9, 10 o'clock. You get there, eight and set up. It shouldn't take you that long. It might be different for the retailers, but for small press, I think an hour to set up your table is more than what you say so, Vince?
Yeah, depending on how much you fiddle about with the layout. I used to spend a lot longer than I do now. You know, once you get to a certain point of you know how your table is laid out, it's a lot quicker.
Yeah,
it's just like, right, that goes there, that goes there, that goes there.
And I think I've done a few this year, but the ones that I really liked was Bristol and Nottingham. And we basically laid our tables out, sat there for an hour, and then just the day just seemed to sort of zip by, you know.
Yeah.
It just like went in a whirl, didn't it? Both those conventions, we barely got a chance to speak to each other, didn't we?
Oh, it was a good time.
Yeah, they are the best bits.
But yeah, expect a few convention specials next year. We'll do what we can,
you know? Yeah,
certainly if we're back at a show together.
And we got a news of a couple of really interesting guests who've come up kind of out of the blue this week. I've got news of two, haven't I? It'll bring a different angle to what we've talked about, certainly. One of them, we're looking at an editor. A very well thought of English editor that I've been chatting to recently about some work.
Yeah.
Who I'd love to get on. And then another big name, actually, a really interesting name, completely out from left field.
Because
a few things.
We've had mention about guests coming back on.
Yeah.
And even though we changed a new format, we're not to say we're not having guests.
Yeah. That was still your guests, weren't we? Yeah.
For instance, you know, with some of the topics that we've got coming up, we're going to bring in some people who know a lot more than we do about these things.
Yeah.
And certainly for people making comics who want tips and just more information, there's some very interesting shows that are going to be happening over the next couple of months. So,
yeah.
Exciting times.
Yeah.
And of course, you'll still get, like, I don't know, toilet humour.
Taking the piss out of Wild Goose, our favourite hobby.
We can deliver.
Yeah, we can. We'll always deliver that. Who knows how long this will last, though? Depending on how long he thinks he can keep up his stamina for it.
Yeah.
It's another Action Dan.
Hey. Are you putting the music in this bit?
Music bed.
I am. It's going to be a bit louder than last week. So there you go.
That was fantastic hearing it last week.
So there you go. This is Action Dan, the weekly segment where, for a comic book show, we decide to not talk about comics and talk whatever we want for about 10 minutes, and that's 80s action movies. Because Dan Butcher, creator of Vanguard and all-round top guy, foolishly said that if he was going on Mastermind, 80s action movies would be his subject of choice.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So we turned it into a little quiz.
Yeah.
And what's the tally so far, Dan?
3-2.
3-2 in favour of you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Winning. Ooh. He's winning. Yes. So we've got another question this week. We got a couple, actually. We want some of them are so obscure that...
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I can't... I feel like I can't ask him because...
I might do a reverse one to come Christmas time. Ask the audience.
Listeners. For a little prize or something.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that. Good idea. They'll just Google it.
Yeah, that has to be honourable. Maybe I'll do it. We'll work something out.
Something that you can't, something specific to a particular movie, you'd have to actually find the movie, watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you could do an online thing where you've got a certain amount of time to answer questions.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a website out there that does that.
Yeah. Or the first person to answer correctly wins something.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, go.
We just figured it out live on air.
Live on air.
That's how we are. We're like a think tank.
Yeah. I know, we are.
They're a think tank, I'm a think wank.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a think tank wank bank. Right, but back to Action Dan. Every week, we ask Dan Butcher a question from one of our lovely listeners. And it's all about an 80s action movie. If he gets it right, he gets to lord it over you. If he gets it wrong, then he'll just draw a random sketch and then send it to you. So, are you ready for this week's then?
I am ready. Yeah, I was born ready.
We'll see about this. This one is from Sam Webster.
Oh,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the question is, in 1987's Over the Top, starring Sylvester Stallone, which is a classic arm wrestling movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, one
hard
to
think
one
of
one
many other arm wrestling films.
It's a bit of a niche movie genre, isn't it, arm wrestling films?
The Gibster's very fond of arm wrestling movies, he was telling me.
Yeah. Well, how many does he know?
Well, we could only think of two.
Over the Top. What's the other one?
What's that one that I posted the picture of about the bloke with the robot arm? Oh, I can't think of it. It's escaping me, the name of it now.
God, that's not fair in an arm wrestling match, surely.
I know, it's
anyway,
cheap.
In 1987's Over the Top starring Sylvester Stallone, which professional wrestler makes an uncredited appearance as a competitor at the arm wrestling tournament?
Ooh.
Oh, Christ.
No, it's not him.
Narrow it down, it's a US one, isn't it? Not like Giant Haystacks.
That would be amazing.
So fucking ace.
Kendo Nagasaki appeared.
Right, let's have a think. So 1980s. It's a complete guess. I'm going to say Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh.
You are wrong. You are wrong.
I saw Hacksaw Jim Duggan this year at New York. Me and Vander saw him.
Oh, nice one.
Did you go, ho?
Vander had to tell me who he was. But yeah.
Oh, right. Did you just think he was like some homeless looking man?
Meathead
bloke. He used to bring a bit of 2x4 into the ring.
Yeah. That's what Vander told me.
Cheating.
Yeah. It was all right.
In the world of scripted wrestling.
He was a baby face, so that was all right. So, I know my wrestling terms. Anyway, you were wrong. The answer was Scott Norton. Everyone knows that.
Scott Norton. I don't think I've ever heard of that name.
Neither have I.
I like that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where he gets cut up and he has a bit of road rage off a wrestler, and then he follows the car and he sees the bloke's kid sitting in the car while the bloke's been getting a coffee or something, and he walks up to the kid and says, "You know your dad's a wrestler. It's all made up." And he drives off. It's all a lie.
I tell you what's funny, that Louis Theroux one. Did you see that episode where he goes to...
The backyard wrestling. Is that the one?
And he said to one of the professionals, "Oh, it's all made up, scripted," and they fucking made him run around, do squat thrusts and push-ups till he puked. Right. He's like, it's not fake.
Huge fan of his. I think he had to desperately claw back some credibility after the Savile incident. But I have downloaded the Scientology movie on Amazon Prime this week, so I'll be watching that.
Someone told me it's very... They kind of really shut the doors to him. He had a really hard time getting stuff out of him.
Oh, did they?
Let me know how you get on.
Unsurprisingly
for a Scientology.
Tony's going to be converted by the next time we speak to him.
Yeah. L. Ron Esmond.
He's going to try and audit us. Oh.
No.
So, so well done, Sam.
Well done, Sam.
So it's 3-3. It's getting serious.
The nail biter.
Biter. How many of these do we want to do?
Don't know.
I reckon
best of what?
If I'm five.
Well, it can't be best of five because you've had three.
So, I mean, the first to five.
Ah, the first to five. That's good.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, should that
we'll be bugged. You know how bored we get with things quickly. Remember, we used to do adverts for another podcast, and I was going about nailing my cock to a bit of wood. Yeah. We got bored with that quickly, didn't we? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Never bored with nailing cocks to bits of wood, though.
No, never gets boring. It's often painful, but yeah.
Well, not if it's not your own.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't usually scream when it's not attached, either. But that's another story.
Yeah, that is another story.
That almost sounded sinister.
to be fair, Dan, most of our shows do. Have you ever listened to them in the dark?
20 minutes at the end. Oh, this is the old Valiant show, isn't it? Great.
Oh, the Valiant show, the wanking show. Yeah.
So we're
this is our desperate attempt to get Valiant to send us comp copies. Yeah. Do we just talk about wanking a lot.
Do we have any shout-outs?
No.
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 I think the Comic House guys, if you look into what they're doing, I think they're very early doors, but they're looking at a platform for small press and indie creators to sell their digital online comics through their site. Okay. Similar to kind of Comixology style. It's very early days at the moment, but as more information comes out about that, I'll let you know via the podcast.
Sounds interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. One minor shout out I just want to do. It's almost a correction in a kind of way. Last week we mentioned about some comics and we brought up Killscreen.
Yes.
And we said Mike Garley's Killscreen. And as Mike told me, it's pretty much Josh Sherwell carrying Mike Garley. So right. He deserves more credit.
So, yeah. Josh hasn't drawn them all, has he?
I think he's drawn all of the main series. I think they've got like
a special out, haven't they?
A couple of like shorts, but I think the main main story is co-created by them.
It's a fantastic comic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a quality book.
I do actually have a shout out to the Gibster, James Gibbs.
Yeah, package which will lead in nicely to what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
He had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toy. My son is currently loving Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so he said he'll send it along for me. Turned up today, and inside the box was Ninjak, Weaponeer, the volume one of the new series, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Did you want to do your little recommended now around that, dude?
Yeah, sure. I've never really massively been into Valiant, but this trade is absolutely brilliant. You can pick it up, not know anything about the character, you're straight in. It's so good. It's like a kind of a superpowered
MI6 agent, isn't it? Yeah. Sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Straight ninja, and they kind of explain away his name, that there's all these other ninja agents that are like Ninja B, Ninja C, Ninja D, and obviously he's Ninja K. All the rest of them have been wiped out before him, so he's the most recent, the newest agent.
Yeah, and I did not know that was the that's genius.
Yeah.
I love a play on words, mate.
Yeah.
In fact, I was reading the comic I'll talk about in a minute. Ninja L gets killed in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice one. But it offers a really fascinating insight into this character that when I'd read previous incarnations about it, I thought it was kind of a bit shallow and not much there, but it hints at someone sort of who's had a desperately horrible life but managed to kind of overcome it and to become quite something quite special and driven. It's really well done. I don't want to say too much more about the story without spoiling it. The art is top notch. There's a couple of little things that I've seen and thought that's really interesting and nice, and I've not seen that done in comics for a while. You've got a great art team that changes throughout the book, but there's sequences like where it recalls back to when he was an earlier in his life when he's an agent, and the art style changes appropriately to more of a kind of pulpy style, and when it's more modern days it's kind of like a more modern comic. And there's another bit where it tells the backstory of another character, and that chap Juan Jose Rip does the art.
Oh, I like his stuff. Yeah, he's got a sort of crazy. I always think,
He did a variant cover for Last Driver.
Oh, of course he did. Oh, yes. Yeah. I've got the print. Yeah,
he did that book I talked about. Was it No Heroes?
Yes.
No Hero.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely, the artwork on that is just crazy. I mean, it's got in the back of this, it's got some heavy black and white pages, and they're absolutely stunning. As is without the colours.
Imagine inking them. Yeah.
God, it's a nightmare. They're just so detailed.
I think the thing for me for Valiant is they create unashamed, good adventure stories.
Yeah.
That you know was what they did when they existed in their previous sort of company form. But they tell them now. I mean, I enjoyed them back then as I enjoy them now. But I think they've added. They've got some really intelligent writers on there as well as great artists. You know, they tell the one I'll talk about in a minute is just it's very densely told. You know, really interesting.
This one, it's the same. Like it's kind of you get that James Bond world, that globe-trotting kind of taste and feel out of it. Like one minute you're in London, next minute you're kind of the other side of the globe, and it's you get the flavour of every kind of city you're in. I can't speak highly enough about it, really.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
I love what Valiant have done. I think they're doing mainstream sort of books with a kind of an independent sort of thinking, I think.
Yeah,
you know, it really feels like they're pushing boundaries. And because of the characters that they have, they can afford to do these things, and they're really sort of testing the limits in both, like, ultra-serious books and also the funny books.
Yeah,
but nobody's completely a hero, nobody's completely a villain. Ninjak has got a real dark edge to him, you know.
Yeah,
and he rubs up a couple of the other heroes, you know, Exo Man of War, he gets on, they have a very sort of fractured relationship, violent, you know, and I don't wish to spoil anything in Bloodshot USA, but you got to read the last page of that. Oh my God, you know.
Nice one.
Yeah, the stories are just, it's like, I imagine it's like the start of the Marvel Universe. Well, I've just caught up with everything now. Mm. And it's just, there's such a sort of intricately told and a real history, a feel of history to it all.
Yeah.
You know, all led by a number of central characters. You've got Ninjak, Bloodshot, Exo Man of War, Faith, and Eternal Warrior, who's just brilliant. Eternal Warrior, to me, is one of the strongest ones. Just incredible stuff.
They're doing this with characters as well that obviously they've had a history, but if we're going to be totally honest, it was a history that sort of, it was there and then it died.
You
know, so these characters were just kind of like templates, you know, something that looked cool or something like this. So all of these creators were able to go in and just give it a completely new breath of life and take these things in different directions that, you know, because I remember back in the days of Wizard magazine and stuff, the only one I'd really see constantly was Exo Man of War because of that sort of suit. But now if I see a Valiant sort of picture, I'll see the Valiant universe. What I like about it is it's not one character sort of leading it all. It's everyone's almost equal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They had to pull away from some characters, didn't they? Because the rights, like Magnus, Robot Fighter, owned by Valiant.
Yeah, and was it Solar? Was it?
Solar Man the Atom, yeah. Yeah, they said to pull back from certain ones, and they've replaced them with a couple of extra characters.
I think they're all the better for it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think And they really interlock. They really mesh all their storylines together. There's somebody with a big board in an editorial room somewhere with lots of string, you know, thinking, right, this, because they jump about in history as well, you know.
Mm. Especially with something like Archer and Armstrong, which is a great action comedy, but not afraid of like action and serious sort of consequences and stuff like that.
Yeah. Which of them all, I think, is the one, if you want to go back to the original series and read, the Barry Windsor-Smith Archer and Armstrong still stands up now. Yeah. I think that's well worth a look, yeah. Yeah, and a great hardback, you can get that as well.
Do they still do Harbringers? Is that still the thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the big one at the moment, isn't it? There's quite a lot. Over the past couple of years, I think that one's really risen to prominence.
Yeah.
Certainly over things like, you don't hear so much, I know it's still going, but things like Quantum and Woody. When that came back, the first arc of Quantum and Woody is just so spectacular.
With Tom Fowler, really nice art,
nice art.
What about Doc Mirage? Was that
Greg Rucker's wife, wasn't it? I hate to call somebody Greg Rucker's wife, but I can't remember her name. But she wrote it for a while. I think it ran for a little bit. I don't think it's still going, is it? I think it's it's finished now. And Unity is kind of their Avengers book, where they've taken the main characters and put them in a team, and that works well.
But
Armor Hunters as well. God, the Armor Hunters arc. Incredible. They created this, spoilers, they created this team of people who are hunting down all the Exo Man of War armor, and then they killed them all, or nearly all of them. It's just this really brutal story that had a real beginning and end to it, which is a really brave thing these days to kill off the characters, you know, after creating them in their own series. Really good stuff, you know.
I mean, I've only got a couple of Valiant books. I think I've got the first Archer and Armstrong, Quantum and Woody, and James Gibbs very kindly also gave me the first Bloodshot.
Yeah.
So
gave me Shadow Man, actually, very kindly. Yeah.
That's next on my list, the Bloodshot one, after being recommended by Stuart as well.
Yeah.
I want to pick that up.
I tell you what, that's got Dan Butcher written all over it. That
book. So good.
But it's a universe that I really want to just keep collecting. Do you know what I mean?
And you can catch up.
Yeah.
You know, it's an intertwined narrative that's growing and growing, like, you know, getting bigger and bigger, but you can still catch up on it now.
Yeah.
You know, and in the back of each of their trades, they list of all the trades that you can get.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great way of doing it, you know.
Yeah, brilliant.
You can catch up by doing this and reading this, and, you know.
Yeah. So what's the Valiant book that you want to talk about, Tony?
I want to talk about Divinity. There's so far been two trades, two miniseries. There's a third one. If you sign up to the Valiant Mailer, the current one, it comes out sort of once a week. The current one has got a preview of the first six pages of Divinity 3. So let me just set it up. So at the height of the Cold War, the Soviet Union greenlit a dangerously advanced mission. They sent a man further into the cosmos than anyone had gone before or since. Lost in the stars, he encountered something unknown. Now, he was part of a three-person trip. And, I mean, time travel is not an easy thing to do, and certainly not an easy thing to write and keep fresh these days. But if you imagine something that has got a lot of the sort of visual qualities of, say, a Cold War space story, you know, like The Right Stuff or something like that, crossed with a little bit of a sort of 1950s and 1960s sci-fi movie, This Island Earth, or, you know, The Shape of Things to Come or something like that, but cross it with the sort of existential feeling of, say, a Dr. Manhattan story. Does that make sense? You know, the way Dr. Manhattan is sort of, he shifts about in his own time stream, doesn't he? And you have this sort of a real feeling of, am I existing now? Am I existing in the moment that I exist in now? Or am I the mass of my experiences? And from that power comes this sort of a being of like almost complete power. Mm. And he appears in the Valiant universe on his way back. He's been on this journey and he's come back. And so there is a certain element where he comes up against the heroes, you know, and the Unity team go up against him. And he's incredibly powerful. But it's got this real personal touch to it. The character in it, who's a Soviet national, he's come from a time, a bit like Captain America, he's come from a time where, you know, everything was different, you know, and the world has changed since then. He's come back into the earth, but it's wrapped around this very sort of high concept, you know, big ideas science fiction story. It's written by Matt Kint, who tells it so intelligently, and from what I understand, the little I know of Matt's work on this, he treats it almost like it's a creator own series. You know, if you strip back the actual characters from the, you know, the existing universe, this could be a standalone science fiction story very easily. Really, really clever. Some of the dialogue will break your heart, genuinely, especially in the second volume, which focuses on the female traveler. And the art is by Trevor Hersine, which I've really enjoyed Trevor's work over the years, and I think Class War with Comex was a real highlight for me, and some of the 2000 AD stuff he's done, but this is just easily his best work. There's real sort of moments of grace in it, and real big moments of, you know, he pulls back, and you know the layout is just incredible, but he doubles up that with some real moments of action, some real moments of movement. I think most importantly, you know, rushing through pages and traveling through time and things exploding into your eye. And there's one page I really love where he sort of takes off the space character with these sort of cables, takes off, and then he lands in a forest, and you have this sort of moment of him walking through this forest. Really, really beautiful. The colour by David Barron, I think pretty much throughout, yeah, it's just incredible. And the art, the covers, I have to say, are also worth a big note, which are by Helena Kevik Durjevic. Really, really beautiful stuff. There's two evidence. I bought the second volume on the South Bank a few weeks ago in the foils there, and as I bought it, the lady behind the counter went, "Oh my God, this is so beautiful." And she'd read it. It only just come in. She'd read it that morning, you know, when the book had come in.
Yeah.
The real, you know, real note of quality. Absolutely. One of my favorite things I've read for a long time. Yeah. Really, really great stuff. Yeah.
Nice one. That sounds great. Okay.
That's my one.
Blimey. Yeah. So Valiant.
You're killing it.
Yeah. They are doing really well.
They're recovering a lot. They're my Marvel and my DC at the moment. They genuinely are. All that pisses me off about those two companies, who I love more, you know, more than anything, the best qualities of them are currently being exemplified by Valiant, you know. Yeah.
And I know, I mean, I've heard it over the past few years. I listen to a few comics podcasts, like 11 o'clock and those sort of guys. And, you know, Valiant has always been, you know, these are books that you need to check out. But they're not making gangbusters in terms of sales. They're not.
No.
You know, there's a. It's not like they've knocked down the door and just sort of said it's not the big two anymore; it's the big three. But I think they deserve bigger sales. But
definitely.
But also at the same time, it makes them a bit nicher. It makes them a bit, I don't know how, you know, I think that makes them a bit more personal as well, because they're a bit smaller. Yeah. It's like that. It's like the cult film, isn't it? That you love, yeah, that isn't mainstream. Yeah.
I think everyone knows it feels personal. It's yours.
Which book are you talking about, Vince? Is it Bloodshot? Is it you got there?
Yeah. Bloodshot is the one I got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And that's,
to me, that's crazy. To me, they're like a pulp. They've got a real sort of pulp quality to them. You know, they're just adventure stories that are told so well.
Mm.
You know, there's no little winks and nods and fucking snarky little jokes and crap like that, you know,
yeah,
to make them popular. There's no sort of pandering to the Twitter generation. It's just good stories. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you just can't go wrong with that. The quality will win out every time.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, we've gushed about Valiant. I think we haven't really spoken much about it. I know I've spoken about Image books before. But we haven't.
I did Eternal Warrior, didn't I? Wrath of the Eternal Warrior is one of my choices. Yeah,
yeah.
It's another great book.
Yeah. So there you go. Check them out, people. You know, if you're not quite sure about Valiant, trust us. You don't need to know anything about them. You don't have to have a history. Just pick up the first trade, and you know, you're good to go. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think it's a secret, and to mention him for a third time on the podcast, Lamming is drawing Ninjak.
That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. So, and he's already done a few covers, and they look outstanding. Have a look at his Twitter stream at the moment and some of the pictures he's putting up. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Do you have another recommendation? Did you say you had... Have you got something else you want to talk about, Tony?
Oh, only that we would... because we were sort of focusing in on Dan's... Vanguard web strip. I thought I might mention a web strip. I only read but two or three. Before coming on the podcast, I didn't read fuck all.
Yeah.
I don't really like the internet, other than for sort of revenge porn, really, and mostly of myself.
Yeah.
That I put up.
It's self-revenge, isn't it?
Yeah. Revenge on myself. Yeah, to make myself feel a bit worse. By the way, 115.
Oh, nice.
Is Querstrit, Elizabeth Querstrit, Q-U-E-R-S-T-R-E-T. So querstrit.co.uk. She does a sort of autobiographical, quirky web strip. It's one of those ones that occasionally, you know, I'm feeling a bit tired and emotional from a day in work. I'll look at some of her sort of quirky strips. It's done with almost sort of a childlike, almost, I don't want to do it, Dan, but almost like a childlike style. And it's just sort of stupid things that happen to her. You know, she might be going for a walk with her boyfriend, or buying something in a shop, or saying something peculiar to a lady on the bus, or something like that. It'll cheer you up. Just have a look at it. It's nothing overly, you know, elaborate about it. It's just a bit of fun that she puts up. And having met Elizabeth a couple of times, her character shines out through the strip, which I think it should do if it's autobiographical. So have a look at that. It's at Querstrit on Twitter. There you go.
Nice one.
As we were talking about web comics, I thought I'd revisit one of my favourites this week. One that I discovered shortly after we started the show. Like Tony said, I read a few, but you know, when you're looking for new stuff, you know, stepping into that world of web comics is quite a massive ocean, isn't it? We've certainly talked about some amazing and crazy ones on here, but one of the ones that is my personal favourite is The Lonely Vincent Bellingham.
Hey!
Yeah, which, when I first said it, they naturally gave me a bit of stick, because their website is called...
Because it's you.
It's lonelyvincent.com.
I remember that whole...
Yeah.
This is the one you got from Googling yourself, wasn't it?
Yeah. Tony Broadside on Vince, that was great.
this is the comic by Diana Huh, is her name, who's an American creator from Oregon, who currently lives in LA and is a storyboard artist at Disney TV.
Cool.
So that'll give you an idea of the sort of style of the artwork. And it's a story about Vincent Bellingham, who's been on sabbatical recently and promised his professor to visit his old friend. Because of this, you would think that Vincent's a nice fellow, but he's actually not. Because Vincent's run away from his family, home, and responsibilities. But when he goes to visit the old friend, he bumps into more than he expects, because the old friend turns out to be Victoria, a mysterious vampire who has two wicked children, Ursula, who's a little witch, and Luke, who is a adolescent werewolf. And now, when you say vampires, witches, werewolves, you think it's going to be a dark story, but this story is anything but. The artwork's just absolutely stunning. I love it. It's light, it's airy. She's got a wonderful mastery over sort of... The whole thing seems quite autumnal in its colours a lot of the time.
Just checking out now. Yeah. It's great.
It's such a sort of lightness of touch as well. And it's very much a character piece, and it's got a nice wit and sense of humour to it. There's two issues that are on there so far. She's, you know, she's doing it like you, Dan. She's very much separating it into issues. And I thoroughly recommend getting back into it. www.lonelyvincent.com. It is actually one of my favourite webcomics, and it's got nothing to do with my name being part of it. And also, Diana is a brilliant creator that you need to follow on Twitter as well. So there you go, The Lonely Vincent. And so that's me. Have we got any more recommendations? Or are you still touching yourself, Tony?
Read the messages.
I've read them and ignored them, Dan.
You can. I always can tell when you've read something. There's nobody can probably notice it but us. But there's like a tiny little hesitation in the voice, and I'm well aware that you're reading the fact that I've written, "I'm not really wanking" with a smiley face, and Dan's written, "That's a shame."
And I'm being professional. I'm being professional and getting on with what I'm supposed to talk about, and at the same time, just sticking a middle finger in their faces, saying, "You're not putting me off." Oh dear.
I say thanks for giving me the opportunity to shine the spotlight on Vanguard.
It's been long overdue. I mean, like I say, we started this show just to talk about comics and talk to people about making comics, but you make a bloody, you know, like I say, before we even spoke for the first time on the first ever Awesome Comics podcast, which people can't believe that was one of the first.
Yeah,
that was
the first. Yeah.
You know, I was reading Vanguard way before then anyway. So it's been cool. Fascinating finding out more about it. You know, I've certainly learned a lot, you know. It's kind of blown my mind a bit. So, and therefore I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen in the new year with it.
Yeah. So should be interesting.
So there you go. And we hope everyone out there has learned a lot more about it and checks it out. Let us know what you think about Vanguard. Let Dan know, obviously, on Twitter. But and the show in general, did you learn anything more about it? There's several different ways that you can get in touch with us to talk more about it. There, you can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. That's also the place that you can send your Action Dan questions.
Yep.
Which we need the question and answer.
Yes, please.
Yeah, because it's the best first to five now. It's getting serious.
Yep.
Shit got real this week.
Sure. So it's 3-0, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 3-0. He's on the cusp.
It's going to take crackerjack timing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Hopefully you people should know that reference. Likewise, if you have any relationship woes, then email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, with the headline, "Ask Auntie Tony." And that'll come back.
Oh, I can only think that people like the Gibster are sitting there thinking, "What shit can I make up to send in?"
Yeah. Like, and also, if you've got any events that need a shout out, we're not going to have like such a massive event section every week because we'll just repeat the same thing. But if there's an upcoming event that you just want to give a shout out to, you know, it's just around the corner and people need to know about it. Because I hate it whenever like a week goes by and I look back and think, "Oh my god, that was last weekend. I could have gone to that."
Yeah,
that's
tell
what
us and we'll let people know.
Yeah. tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Let us know about those. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Thank you for listening to us on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, thank you very much, and leave us a nice review. Hopefully Tony hasn't put you off with his charity wanking.
I'm not sure there's any charity element.
No, no one's getting anything good out of that, really, are they? Thank you for listening to us on Stitcher or the Podnose Network. We love you all. Where can people find us online, Mr. Esmond?
Yeah, Ezohyz on Twitter, or idoneasexwee.com.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Dan, where can
you can read
you?
Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at vanguardcomic. That was pretty quick, wasn't it?
It was. And the amount of times that we've said Vanguard this week, it's a record.
Yeah.
But rightfully so. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, even though Tony will take the piss out of me, but I don't care.
Never.
You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. Right. It's been another one in the can.
A bit of a midweek recording, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep,
it has been. But
I think we sounded all right.
Yeah, plenty of joy to be had. So keep your eyes peeled.
I've enjoyed myself during it.
Good. keep your eyes peeled, folks, because we'll be announcing what the next show will be about fairly soon.
So you know that, I don't even know.
You know what that means? It means listener polls.
Polls.
It means we love the polls.
We know? Do.
Just stick a dollar in. No, hang on. And we want your feedback as always, folks, and we love it. So keep your eyes peeled, have a good week, read comics, make comics. Dan, sign us off, my man. It's been your week, so sign us off.
Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time on the Awesome Comic Podcast.
See ya.
Ooh, well, like that. A little bit different at the end. Ooh,
yeah.
Sexy.
It's like the end of Richard and Judy.